conflict in Ukraine.
Moscow has warned that it would reassess its cooperation with the world body if it carries out an investigation into the origins of the drones. Tehran has dismissed accusations by some Western countries and their media outlets that it provided weapons, including drones, to Russia for deployment against Ukraine. Iran's foreign ministry has called the allegations unfounded and made on the basis of misinformation and ill-intentioned presumptions. The anti-Iran claims first emerged in July, with U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan alleging that Washington had received information indicating that the Islamic Republic was preparing to provide Russia with up to several hundred drones, including weapons-capable UAVs, on an expedited timeline for use in the war in Ukraine. However, the Pentagon said it could not confirm the transfer of any Iranian weaponry to Russia. Since the very beginning, Iran rejected the claims, with the country's foreign ministry stating Tehran's preparedness to hold dialogue with Ukraine towards nullification of the allegations. Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian has even proposed a joint meeting between Iranian and Ukrainian military personnel and experts to review battlefield evidence of Iranian drones used by Russia in Ukraine. Despite that, Kyiv and its allies repeated the baseless American narrative without providing any evidence. The US, EU, and UK imposed sanctions against the country. So, if Kyiv and the West are so sure, then why are they reluctant to provide detailed evidence that supports their claims? Plus, while Iran has managed to advance its defensive capabilities despite US sanctions, is Washington using Ukraine as a false pretext to bring the Europeans along in a bid to impose an arms embargo against Iran to hamper the country's progress in the defense sector?
Iran has witnessed a deadly terrorist attack. The carnage happened at a holy shrine in the south-central city of Shiraz in Fars province. It left over a dozen people dead, including women and children. Over two dozen people were also injured in the attack. The bloodbath happened at the Shah Cheragh Shrine, which is one of the popular pilgrimage sites in Iran. The Daesh terrorist group has claimed responsibility. The gunman shot his way into the shrine through one of the entrances. He then headed to the main compound, where he opened fire at pilgrims and staff. Eyewitnesses have told reporters that loud screams were heard in the women's section of the shrine at prayer time, when suddenly an armed man was spotted with a Kalashnikov firing indiscriminately in the compound of the shrine. Officials say the perpetrator is a non-Iranian national who has been arrested. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has issued a statement on the incident, saying that strong action must be taken to identify and tackle the root causes of such heinous crimes. The leader said that all people and entities in the country are responsible in the face of seditious acts by the enemy and their traitorous or ignorant stooges. He advised everyone to stay united against those undermining the people's security and disrespecting their sanctities. Iran says the attack is part of a larger plot to destabilize the country. Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian says that Tehran has reliable information that shows that terrorists and foreign meddlers have created a multi-layered scheme to make the country insecure. He says this latest attack has unraveled the sinister intentions of those promoting terror and violence in Iran. Earlier, President Ebrahim Raisi expressed his condolences to the families of the pilgrims who were killed or injured in the attack.
These riots paved the way for terrorist attacks. They came to Shah Cheragh Mausoleum and sprayed with bullets innocent people who were worshipping God. The ground for such terrorist attacks was prepared by riots.
The carnage in Iran has sparked a wave of condemnation. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has strongly censored the attack and called for bringing the perpetrators to justice. Syrian Foreign Ministry has called the mass shooting a cowardly act, while blaming the U.S. for using terror attacks as a tool to coerce nations into submission. Russia and China have also condemned the carnage. And Pakistan's Foreign Office spokesperson and the Speaker of the National Assembly have condemned the attack, saying the people of Pakistan share the grief of the Iranian nation. Sayyid Ammar al-Hakim, the head of Iraq's National Wisdom Coalition, also decried the attack. Iranian officials say the terrorist attack has revealed the actual extent of the enemy's cruelty. It comes against the backdrop of the latest foreign-backed riots, which erupted after a young woman, Mahsa Amini, died in the hospital 3 days after she collapsed in police custody. Iran has denounced the silence of human rights organizations on the terrorist crime in Shiraz. It says the terrorists based in the U.S. and Europe enjoy unwavering backing there, and Western countries refuse to publicly condemn terrorist incidents inside of Iran.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the position of ethics in the Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of the position of ethics in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Islamic text, we see that in Islam, the first and foremost thing which is important, and the Quran has emphasized on it, it is about the ethics and self-perfection, how to purify ourselves, our souls. This is very important. Why? Because when we look at the human being, when we look at the humans or a man, we see that Allah has made him out of two things. Number one, which is the most important, is the soul of this person, which will travel from this material world to the hereafter. The other thing is the body. And generally we see that we give importance to the body and we forget about our soul, whereas the tahzibun nafs, the purification of the soul, is related to the soul, whereas the ethics, it is related to the soul. Yes, it is related to the body, but obviously it has effect, a positive and direct effect with the soul, and it is connected with the soul, because when we are living a life in which we are ethical, we are someone who deals with the people nicely, and we are in the parameters of the ethics, then obviously others also communicate with us in the same way. And this shows that how this shows the personality of the person. Therefore, it is important because Islam has given importance to this issue. And when we even look at the Quran, we see that Allah has said, "Innaka la'ala khuluqin azim." He said about the Prophet that indeed you are at the extreme level of the goodness and the ethics. So you have been created as someone who is a role model. Therefore, it is necessary to give importance to the ethics in the Islamic lifestyle. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the position of ethics in the Islamic lifestyle. Well, when we look at the Quran, we see that, for example, in chapter Jum'ah, which we recite every Jum'ah, or every Friday, in the chapter Jum'ah or Friday, it is mentioned in the second verse, the reason of the prophets, why the prophets are raised amongst these nations, amongst the people. And there Allah says, "Huwallazi ba'atha," he is who, Allah is the one who has raised, "fil ummiyina rasul," and he has raised amongst the people, amongst the ummi, the rasul, a prophet from them, minhum, yatlu alayhim ayati. What is the duty of this prophet? Is to recite the verses for these people, to tell them about the message of God, to convey the message of God. Wa yuzakkihim. Now this is important. Tazkiyah is to purify them. It is to purify them. So his duty is to teach them through the verses of the Quran how to be a good person, to teach them the ethics. And once he has taught them, then yuzakkihim, he has to practically make them purify and he has to purify them. وَيُعَلِّمُهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْحِكْمَةَ. And after they have get the purification, once they have the good ethics, then he will teach them the knowledge of book and wisdom to them. Therefore, in order to gain the knowledge of book and wisdom, in order to have the knowledge, purification is the first step that we need to gain. So it is important for a Muslim having a Muslim or Islamic lifestyle to purify himself, to have a good ethics, to make himself someone who can absorb the light of knowledge in him. And therefore, it is important. And that's why Islam has given importance to the akhlaq or the ethics and tahzibun nafs, which is purification of the soul, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Russia is the world's third largest oil producer and a leading exporter of natural gas, fertilizer and wheat. And also Ukraine's grain feeds millions of people around the world. But with the start of Russia's special operation in Ukraine on 24th of February and the consequent heavy Western sanctions against Moscow, food and energy trade was disrupted. And the inflation caused by Russia-Ukraine conflict has spread all over the world. We have taken a look at some of the world press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian writes, according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, the world's leading economies are sliding into recession as the global energy and inflation crisis sparked by Russia's special operation in Ukraine cut growth by more than previously forecast. A dependency on expensive gas for heavy industry and home heating will plunge Germany, Italy, and the United Kingdom into a long period of recession after global growth was projected by the OECD to slow to 2.2% in 2023 from a forecast in June of 2.8%. With the global economy needing to grow by about 4% to keep pace with rising populations, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, said incomes per head will be lower in many countries. OECD's interim chief economist, Alvaro Pereira, said the world was paying a steep price for the Ukraine conflict, NATO's expansionist policies, and consequently Russia's decision to restrict access to gas supplies more tightly than was forecast in June. He said governments would need to encourage households and businesses to reduce their consumption of gas and oil to help weather a difficult winter. Alvaro Pereira, OECD's chief economist, also supported the determination of central banks to reduce inflation by raising interest rates. He said, "We need to reduce demand. There's no doubt about that. And monetary and fiscal authorities need to work hand in hand to achieve it." China's economic growth rate is expected to drop this year to 3.2%, its lowest since the 1970s, causing a large decrease in trade with neighbours South Korea, Vietnam and Japan, dragging down their capacity to grow. However, the Paris-based Policy Forum was most alarmed by the outlook across Europe, which is most directly exposed to the fallout from Russia's military operation in Ukraine. The OECD forecast that Britain's GDP growth would be flat in 2023. However, this projection does not take into account the measures announced in Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng's mini-budget on Friday, 23rd of September. The OECD forecasts a drop in economic growth in the Eurozone from 3.1% this year to only 0.3% in 2023, meaning that many countries in the 19-member currency bloc will spend at least part of the year in recession. A recession is defined as two straight quarters of contraction. France could escape a recession if it grows by 0.8% next year, as predicted by the OECD, but will suffer along with other European countries after a downgrade in gross domestic product growth since June of 1.3 percentage points. Germany's dependence on Russian gas before the Ukraine conflict means the German economy will shrink by 0.7% next year, down from a June estimate of 1.7% growth. The Fortune website explains more about the same story. One of the top policy and economic development forums reports during the first half of 2022, inflation in many countries skyrocketed to levels unseen since the 1980s. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, said on Monday, 26th of September, in its latest Economic Outlook report, that fixing the problem might require engineering a dramatic economic slowdown in many countries. The two drivers behind the expected slowdown are the costs associated with the Ukraine war, which the OECD said will lead to a $2.8 trillion drop in global gross domestic product next year, and central banks worldwide tightening their monetary policies in an effort to reduce inflation, measures that could tip several major economies into prolonged recession. The OECD Secretary-General Matthias Cormann said in a statement, "The global economy has lost momentum in the wake of Russia's conflict with Ukraine. Gross domestic product growth has stalled in many economies and economic indicators point to an extended slowdown." While the economic outlook has darkened around the world, not every country will be affected in the same way. In the United States, where the U.S. Federal Reserve has implemented a series of aggressive interest rate hikes to slow inflation, economic growth will slip from 1.5% this year to 0.5% next year. Also, Europe is set to bear the brunt of next year's economic decline, as the region with the most exposure to the Ukraine war and its aftershocks. Europe's economic downturn will likely combine with more persistent inflation, especially energy. The OECD report says the situation in Europe could push many countries into a full-year recession in 2023, while growth will remain slow until 2024. Recessions in European countries will likely lead to a decline in employment and in hours worked, with some European manufacturers already furloughing staff and cutting operational hours due to high electricity costs. OECD Secretary General Matthias Cormann said inflationary pressures that were already present as the global economy emerged from the coronavirus pandemic have been severely aggravated by the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. This has further driven rising energy and food prices that now threaten living standards for people across the globe. Turkey's Anadolu news agency elaborates more on the same issue. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, reported insufficient supply diversification and demand reductions could cause shortages that will push up energy prices, dent confidence and financial conditions, and make it necessary for businesses to temporarily ration their use of gas. The OECD said, taken together, these shocks could reduce economic growth in the European economies by over 1.25 percentage points in 2023 relative to baseline and raise inflation by over 1.5 percentage points. This would push many European countries into recession in 2023. While the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, noted that higher interest rates are a primary driver behind global recession risks, it said such action was needed to tame inflation. The report said continued monetary policy tightening is needed to lower inflation durably, adding that policymakers must carefully balance economic uncertainty with the need to bring prices down. However, World Bank officials have called on central banks to refrain from competitive interest rate hikes that will push the global economy into recession and harm the economies of developing countries the most.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station, Choo Choo Kachoo. It's the Youth Station for you. I'm your humble host, Muzaffar Haider. Here in the studio today, we have with us a very special guest, Sister Beta.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to your listeners and my dear brother here. Actually, it's a big pleasure for me to have the honor to be here with you today. And I'm Beta, medical student here, and I'm at your service.
It's a pleasure and an honor to have you. So, how is you? I mean, you're obviously studying a lot of your time, right? You're going to be a medical student, mashallah.
Yeah.
Well, you are a medical student. How often do you actually study? I'm just curious.
It takes a long time, actually. I'm actually right now I'm pre-studying my lessons for next semester, and 8 hours a day.
8 hours a day? Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that sounds... So, here's the real question. In that busy schedule of yours,
yeah,
where do you find time to fit the Quran in?
Nice question. You know what? Quran or Holy Quran is one of my, favorite books, actually. I don't want to look at it as a typical book, but it's a part of my life because I see religion as lifestyle, not some guidelines only to go through, I don't know, a connection between me and my God, not that much. Mm-hmm. I think religion is beyond something that, you know, the way you're going to interact with other people and so on. And because of that, I actually have a special time for reciting Holy Quran. And one of my favorite way of doing that is only just reading the translation of this, because mm-hmm. my Arabic is not that much good to understand the Arabic content of Holy Quran. But as you know, the Quran is the miracle of our religion. Mm-hmm. And because of that, there are two contexts, actually. The literature of this book, which is Arabic or something. Mm-hmm. And the other part is the content of this book, which is somehow understandable for me. Mm-hmm. And I focus on that part.
So you pretty much read the translation. How often do you do that? Sorry to put you on the spot.
No. Actually, what do you mean by how often? You mean at the time I spend on that? Actually, maybe half an hour a day.
Okay, brilliant, mashallah. Yeah, that's actually not that bad. I wish we could all put aside, like, you know, at least half an hour a day to recite some of the Quran. And it's really fantastic that you're reading it with the translation because, yeah. You know, actually understanding the Quran is really, really important. Something that we often overlook, but it seems so obvious. I mean,
yeah,
yes,
exactly.
It's the Quran, it's the holy book of Islam. Reading it gives you lots of ajr and divine reward, etc., etc. But hey, at the end of the day, it's a book. It's supposed to be understood.
Yeah,
it's supposed
exactly.
to be picked up and read like a book and really understood. But now here's another question. Do you ever find it difficult to engage with the book? Because it's not exactly a story.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, and it's not exactly a historical book. And it's not exactly a scientific book. And it's not exactly a philosophical book.
Yeah.
In fact, it has elements of every science and subject that exists in the entire universe incorporated within one piece of literature.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's poetic, but at the same time, it's not poetry. You know, and so it's complicated sometimes?
Yeah, it is actually for me. You know, sometimes I have to go to just seek for the meaning of the verses I'm reading. And actually, this is so beautiful for me that I'm reading some words and I cannot understand even a piece of that words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just shows me that Quran is something beyond what our beliefs, you know, beyond humanity.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that nobody can write, actually, because of that, it's a miracle. When I was a child, actually, I want to tell you that, I was thinking like, okay, I'm reading the words of God. And it was really interesting for me to think about, think it in this way that, okay, there is a God here that is talking to me actually by some words. And it was somehow magical and mysterious for me, mesmerizing or something. And, you know, right now, even at this age, I have the same feeling about Quran. I know maybe because, for example, human being is somehow always tend to be used to something, you know, mm-hmm. what? And this addiction or this addiction to day-to-day life will make you ignore these kind of miracles in your life. But still, I want to be a child and think that way, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It is more mysterious than what you think. And this connection between God and you that is beyond words, that is through these words, I think it's still magical and fantastic. And I just want to go through it, the words, the meaning, the philosophy behind this. And I think that would never make me tired or something. The thing I'm really interested in is just understanding the meaning of Quran. And, you know, I think there is no hurry. I just want to go through it as a
sister, you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
There's a hadith of Imam Ali alayhi salam where he says, don't read the Quran in order to try to finish the chapter.
Yeah.
You know, pause, reflect, contemplate. That's the really important part. Don't be in any rush to try and finish the Quran. You don't need to finish it. Inshallah, if Allah wants you to finish it, you will. But the real idea is to really get that depth and that meaning. Even if you contemplate over one line, the worth of that one line is more than if you read like 10 pages but without understanding anything. But that's a really beautiful point that you've touched upon, this idea of recognizing that you're actually reading the words of Allah, that feeling of sense, that sense of mystery that you have. And that's really a fantastic thing. And actually, that's one of the things I wanted to touch upon in this episode, is the idea that it's just an idea, right?
Yeah.
How about we read the Quran pretending that we're disbelievers? Right, imagine that you're not a Muslim for a moment, right? And then read the Quran.
Yeah.
Why am I saying this? Because often when you're already a Muslim, you overlook some of the more profound verses of the Quran.
Yeah.
Right, because you're already a Muslim.
Yeah. I know that. I know what you mean.
Now, we're going to come back to this idea after a short break, inshallah. We'll see you very soon.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to the studio. We were discussing about engaging with the Holy Quran. And one of the interesting and fruitful ideas that we've brought up is the idea that what if we approach the Quran, this is something just for us to try, as a non-Muslim. Imagine for a moment that you're non-Muslim. For me, I don't know why, that's a really scary idea.
Yeah.
You know, just theoretically, we approach the Quran as a non-Muslim. And some of those more profound verses that we'll often overlook because we're already Muslim, they will suddenly start to hit home. You know, because you wonder, and there's lots of videos online of non-Muslims.
And, hearing Quran.
Yeah, they're reading the Quran and they're being amazed by it and they're being enamored by it. Some of them burst into tears. I don't know if you've seen some of these videos.
Yeah, I've seen that.
They're really beautiful. And you wonder to yourself, why can't I have some of that, you know, purity.
Yeah.
In the Hawza Sister, the Islamic seminary, you bump into all sorts of interesting people. One of the people I bumped into was this priest, Christian priest, who had converted to Islam. And he told me a hadith from the Christian perspective from Prophet Isa, Jesus, alayhi salam. And he said, you should have faith like a child.
Nice.
And it's going back to what you said previously before the break, where, you know, you have this kind of innocence in you when you're a child and it kind of enlivens your...
Yeah, I know that. But, you know, there is something always bothering me that, okay, since I was born here, I was always a Muslim. And this feeling of being a Muslim, always saying Quran readings, reciting Holy Quran and something like that, will somehow make it, you know, a routine for me. And because of that, I cannot understand and touch that kind of mystery in that book. And this feeling is somehow in my nerve always, actually. And because of that, I tried this method of pretending to be a non-Muslim and go through this book and just recite it or something.
Oh, you did it already?
Yeah, I did it, but it wasn't that much useful for me. I don't know why. It was like I was pretending and I didn't like it. You know, it was like I'm faking to be someone else and I'm not. And actually, this paradoxical battle in myself kind of bothers me and I couldn't do that, you know. But the thing is, I think the mystery of these words in this poem through the heart of all the people is somehow a miracle. Like, actually, when you look at other people that even cannot understand the Arabic content of Quran, and when they listen to the reciting this book, they are amazed by that. And this is always my same question. Why? Why, you know, can they feel that I cannot? Why I cannot feel the same way?
Well, let me tell you something even more extraordinary. You don't have to pretend.
So what?
You don't have to pretend because we assume that we're already, for example, believers. But we're not believers in the true sense.
I know.
Right? So, for example, there's a verse of the Quran that says, إِنَّمَا الْمُؤْمِنُونَ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا بِاللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ ثُمَّ لَمْ يَرْتَابُوا وَجَاهَدُوا بِأَمْوَالِهِمْ وَأَنفُسِهِمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. So it says, only those people are believers who believe in Allah and the last day, then they have no doubts and they do jihad with their property and with themselves in the way of Allah. Right?
It is difficult.
Subhanallah, right?
Yeah.
So we often approach the Quran assuming so much about ourselves, thinking that I'm already a Muslim. I'm already a believer. I'm already a Shia, right?
Yeah.
And even to an extent, we could argue that we might be Muslims, but we're not complete Muslims.
You know, I want to ask you that. What is the standard? What is the, you know, level of thing that I cannot measure my actual faith? You know, I was thinking like, okay, there should be a standard that I have to go through there and, okay, say that, okay, I do this, I do that. So I am a faithful person. Mm-hmm. But I've never could found something like that, unfortunately. And I was like, okay, so what should I do about this? You know,
yeah.
How should I measure my faith?
How should you measure your faith? That's a really big question, sister. The first thing I'd say is to measure how well you're abiding by the wajibat, right? It seems like something very, very simple. But really, that's what it comes down to. Because we've been given certain commandments by Allah. For example, the daily prayers. For example, fasting in the month of Ramadan. All of these basic things. How well are we adhering to those basic things? And how well are we avoiding those things which are haram? If we're doing that, then we can say, Alhamdulillah, I am at the first level. You know, I'm a Muslim because I've truly submitted to the will of Allah. Then we go to a higher level, which is the level of the believers. The level of the believers, if you change from being just a Muslim and you go to the level of being a believer, it is such a drastic change in our lives that it's almost like converting from being a non-Muslim to being a Muslim.
Yeah.
Right? So often we'll be born into an Islamic household and we'll think, we'll look at, for example, converts and we'll be like, you're so much better than me. You changed your entire lifestyle because of me. You know, for example, if you're a woman, you didn't used to wear hijab and now you're wearing hijab.
Yeah.
If you're a man,
really
you didn't used to have a beard. You know,
always.
I don't get to do that because I was already born a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're already born a Muslim, you have to strive to be a mu'min, you see? And when you strive to be a mu'min, that change that you implement into your life is such a drastic change. Honestly, you'll get the same reward as one who converts from being a non-Muslim to becoming a Muslim.
Okay, got it. So you're telling me that I have the blessing to be a Muslim, to being born a Muslim. And so I'm at this level, I have to try to go to the next level.
Exactly.
Okay, I would think about that actually. And I think it was a nice actually suggestion for me to go search for the next level because I always thought, okay, I had this level of being, so what should I do next? Maybe I don't evaluate it that much that I have to. But right now, you know, somehow my mindset is changed. Like, okay, you're here at this level and you have to be actually thankful about this blessing.
Exactly.
So, shukran lillah. And I'm looking for a next level, actually. And I wish, my power and my ability would be that much enough to go through the suffering or a road, which is somehow difficult. Actually, the blessing that is waiting for me, I think it's worth it.
And don't stop there. Remember, if you become a mu'min and you're in the household of mu'minin and you're born into a household where your parents are mu'minin, you still have a way to go.
Thank you. From myself
and from Sister Bita, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
America's deployment of nuclear-capable B-52 bombers to the Royal Australian Air Force Base in Australia's Northern Territories is likely to fuel tensions with China. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. An expanded Royal Australian Air Force base in the Northern Territories of Australia will have space for up to 6 American nuclear-capable B-52 aircraft as part of a US-funded project that is likely to fuel tensions with China. Officials in Canberra confirmed that the US-funded aircraft parking apron at the Royal Australian Air Force Base Tyndall, 320 kilometres southeast of Darwin, would be capable of accommodating up to 6 B-52 aircraft, but said it could also house other aircraft types. They said the project was currently in the design phase and played down the significance of the development, saying American bomber aircraft had been visiting Australia since the early 1980s and conducting training in Australia since 2005. But the detailed plans, first reported by ABC on Monday, suggest the new Labor government in Australia has locked in plans initiated under the former coalition government to expand visits to Australia by US aircraft. The B-52 is a long-range heavy bomber that can carry out ocean surveillance and anti-ship operations, and can carry nuclear or precision-guided conventional ordnance, according to a US government summary. Four Corners reported the US Department of Defense, the Pentagon, had budgeted $14.4 million for squadron operations and maintenance of facilities at Tyndall. It cited US documents as saying, "The squadron operation facilities required to support strategic operations and to run multiple 15-day training exercises during the Northern Territory dry season for deployed B-52 squadrons." The Minister for Defence Personnel, Matt Keogh, said Australia must remain vigilant amid regional tensions, but he did not think the B-52 rotation plans would inflame tensions with China. The Minister for Defence Personnel, Matt Keogh, said, "I don't think so at all. I think what's really important here is that the more we are able to build interoperability with the Americans, growing on that very strong alliance." America's ambassador to Australia, Caroline Kennedy, avoided commenting directly on the B-52 plans on Monday, but said the United States was determined to support peace and stability throughout this region through diplomacy, dialogue and deterrence. In an interview with ABC News Breakfast, US Ambassador to Australia Caroline Kennedy said the Indo-Pacific was facing increasing tensions and the United States would work with our partners and allies to make this region safe. Former Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison revealed in September of last year that he expected the United States to increase its military presence in the region while Australia awaits nuclear-powered submarines under the AUKUS deal, the first of which were at that stage expected to be ready by late 2030s. Senior ministers Peter Dutton and Maurice Payne held annual talks with their US counterparts in Washington, D.C., a day after the AUKUS announcement, and also flagged plans for more US military deployments to Australia. Senior Minister Peter Dutton said the alliance with the United States must be match fit to meet the strategic challenges ahead and announced greater air cooperation through rotational deployments of all types of US military aircraft to Australia, including strategic bombers. Sky News Australia has also covered the same story, giving us more details. Australia has dismissed outbursts from China over its decision to develop nuclear-powered submarines and flagged plans for more US military deployments in Australia. The Chinese embassy in Canberra has in turn accused the Australian government of sliding further down on the road of harming China-Australia relations and of lacking independence from the United States. Speaking after talks with the Biden administration in Washington, the Australian Defence Minister, Peter Dutton, said the nation was a proud democracy in our region and no amount of propaganda can dismiss the facts. The Australian government also renewed its request to China to resume high-level talks, an offer that the Australian Foreign Minister Maurice Payne said mature actors would be prepared to take up. The Australian Defence Minister, Peter Dutton, and Maurice Payne joined their US counterparts for the annual dialogue known as AUSMIN, the first since the Biden administration took office. But it was overshadowed by the fallout from the announcement of the security pact among Australia, United States and the United Kingdom, the AUKUS pact. The deal has resulted in Australia tearing up its $90 billion contract with France for diesel submarines and will instead see the United States and Britain share sensitive technology with Australia to let it develop its first nuclear-powered submarines. The Chinese government said the extremely irresponsible deal would seriously undermine regional peace and stability, while the tabloid, the Global Times, carried an editorial warning Australia not to act provocatively, or China would certainly punish it with no mercy. The Australian Defence Minister, Peter Dutton, dismissed the reaction from Beijing. Peter Dutton said, "This is not the first time that we've seen different outbursts from China in terms of Australia's position. We stand with our neighbours in the Indo-Pacific to ensure enduring peace, and this collaboration makes it a safer region. That's the reality, and no amount of propaganda can dismiss the facts." A joint statement issued by Australia and the United States criticised China's expansive maritime claims in the South China Sea that are without a legal basis. A Chinese embassy spokesperson rejected the unfounded accusations and erroneous remarks against China by both Australia and the United States. The Chinese embassy spokesperson said this petty move to put pressure on China will be of no avail, but a stage farce.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. Those who remember Allah. This is the mark of someone who has an intellect. They remember Allah. Standing, sitting, and laying on their sides. The Quran, Surah 3, verse 191. In other words, in every circumstance, they remember. However, remembering Allah here does not refer to the mystical trance-like state of the dervish that some people crave. Always remembering Allah, always chanting, Hu. But that is not what we mean. We mean actively remembering God. But what is it to actively remember God? Such that his remembrance is counted as an act. How can one achieve this? And reflect on the creation of the heavens and the earth. Do you see? Those who have intellects, those who are truly wise, are those who ponder and think. And reflect on the creation of the heavens and the earth. And as they ponder on this, they say, whether inwardly in their hearts or outwardly with their tongues, Our Lord, you have not created this in vain. Immaculate are you. You have not created this without a purpose. You are too immaculate to have made this without a purpose. In other words, this is the most fundamental principle of their belief system or worldview.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Each and every worldview starts from a simple fact. We are here for some purpose. If you believe in God, you say you were created for a purpose. And if you do not believe in God, you say you have a purpose here. Do you see the most fundamental idea of a philosophy that is meant to inspire a way of life, whether for an individual or a society, is this. Our Lord, you have not created this in vain. He is a theist. He believes in God. So he says, Our Lord, you did not create heavens and the earth and all they contain for no reason. You are too immaculate and wise to do such a thing. Therefore, I have a moral responsibility. I must follow a path. I am but a speck among the wonders of the cosmos. But I am here for a reason. In this grand edifice, you have made a place for me and given me a purpose to fulfill. But I might disrupt the harmony of this system. Immaculate are you. So save us from the punishment of the fire. Whilst the fire of the resurrection is real, it is also a symbol of the fire of God's wrath, anger and retribution. End of the cosmos. You must pay attention to this because this is all a prelude so that we can apprehend the meaning of faith based on understanding from these verses.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran. Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puriza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
History repeats itself once more in Lebanon as President Michel Aoun steps out of a presidential palace, which will remain vacant for an unknown period of time. Addressing flocks of supporters, Aoun said a chapter has ended in Lebanon's politics and a new chapter will begin.
A new phase begins, and this new phase requires struggle and work to exit our crises. The country is looted, and we have to carry out a lot of efforts to uproot corruption.
Aoun talked about the recent agreement with Israel to demarcate Lebanon's maritime borders. He said the deal secured the nation's access to its natural resources, adding that the future revenues should be used to repair the Lebanese economy.
The demarcation of our maritime border will allow us to extract the national treasure of petrol and gas, which would grant us the needed capital to come out of our economic and financial crisis. We hope to see a sovereign fund that would be used for development and also for the upcoming generations.
Aoun took office in 2016. His was marred by mass protests, a severe economic crisis, and currency collapse, and the August 2020 portside blast that killed hundreds.
President Michel Aoun ends his term today at a time when Lebanon is deeply divided on various issues. But it was this term that has given Lebanon what experts are calling a golden opportunity to become a gas exporter and salvage its economy.
President Aoun does not only leave behind a country without a head of state, but he goes back to his residency. The political divide remains quite entrenched, and experts see that the maritime border deal proves that the West has lifted its undeclared blockade on Lebanon.
In Lebanon, we are not usually good at seizing opportunities, but we benefited from the opportunity of demarcating the maritime border. Since there was a Western interest in having a stability in the Mediterranean region and allowing Lebanon to extract its resources. But will the Lebanese seize this opportunity to form an agreement which could result in the election of a president? We are waiting for the upcoming hours, which could evolve into security threats or perhaps surprises.
Lebanese lawmakers have failed to agree on electing a successor for Aoun, with no side having a clear majority to impose a candidate to succeed him. A caretaker government has been in place since the parliamentary elections last spring, and with no hope in forming a new cabinet in the last hours of Aoun's term, political divisions are expected to deepen until the election of a new president. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Wednesday's terror attack on Shahchiragh Holy Shrine in Iran's city of Shiraz has saddened Iranians as well as many people around the globe. Among them, Afghans who have been bearing the brunt of blind terror attacks for years say the attack opened their old wounds. They say the tragic terror attack touched their hearts and they share the grief of Iranian people.
I express my condolences to all Iranians, particularly those who live in Shiraz, for their losses in the terrorist attack on Shahchiragh Shrine. I was shocked and saddened that innocent worshippers were killed there. I also express my sympathy with families of victims. Iran has not been only our neighboring country and a friend of Afghanistan, but also a second home for we Afghans.
Indeed, it was a horrific and exhausting attack. We strongly condemn it. We Afghans can feel how terrifying such attacks can be. Of course, the attack on innocent people saddened all informed and civilized people. I hope the perpetrators and organizers of the attack are brought to justice and punished.
Afghan experts and activists stress the need for global unity, especially among Muslims, against terror acts. They believe the enemies of Islam and Muslims try to destabilize the region by sowing discord among its inhabitants.
The important point about the terror attack in Iran is that some countries who claim to be superpowers, and we know them as arrogant, try to protect their hegemony in any way possible. One of their evil deeds has been plotting religious wars. In my opinion, the Shiraz attack was one of such conspiracies. I believe the Iranian people and all Muslims should be vigilant and informed, especially in the current situation.
At least 13 people, including two children, were killed after a gunman opened fire on pilgrims at the Holy Shrine in Shiraz. Dozens of others were also wounded.